Hi, and welcome back. I'm Paul Stevenson. I will be live with you here for the next 90 minutes. In the second hour, I'm delighted to say I have E. Michael Jones coming up. Mike is the editor of Culture Wars magazine. He is a Catholic apologist. He's an author. He's written The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, Barn Metal, and he's also written a book called, what's the name of it? Libido Dominandi. Sexual liberation as a form of political control. And I'm going to be talking to him about that, particularly in light of which will be of interest to him pertaining to that book, and just generally as a Catholic, the recent result of the Irish abortion referendum. Are you with me, Mike?
Yes, Paul. Good to be
great
with
to have, you. Yeah, great to have you on again, Mike. How's things?
Good.
All right. Okay, cool. All right, let's just jump straight into it. I wanted to talk to you about, it probably would tie in quite nicely with your Libido Dominandi book, the whole Irish referendum situation and the disappointment and upset that was. I personally felt very grieved and upset by it. And also, we can talk about, I don't know where you have caught up in anything to do with Tommy Robinson, but we can talk about Jez Turner and his imprisonment as well, if that's cool.
Yes, I was disappointed as well with the Irish referendum. It shows how far the Irish have declined since the Eighth Amendment was put in place in the 1980s, and when one-third of the Irish population showed up when Pope John Paul II visited Phoenix Park. What has happened over that time is that Ireland has basically lost its independence and become a colony of the New World Order. You can tell you're a colony of the New World Order when you take things like gay marriage seriously. Only colonies take this thing seriously. I said that in Australia, and then the Australians went ahead and approved it. The Irish approved gay marriage by referendum, and then they went ahead and approved abortion by referendum. I'm excluding all of the discussion about fraud now, because there's a lot of discussion about fraud in this last referendum.
Yeah, there certainly is. And could you imagine the outrage if it was in the shoe was in the other foot and the result went the other way? That we would never hear the end of this voter fraud and the demands for another referendum.
Well, the way the New World Order works is that the Irish get to vote until they get it. They say what the oligarchs want, and then that's the end of all referenda. So that's pretty much the way they're talking now. But let's assume that it's legitimate. This is unprecedented. The United States of America, for all of its faults, never approved abortion, and it never approved gay marriage. In fact, whenever these issues were put up for a popular vote, they were voted down. Even California, probably the most liberal state in the United States of America, voted down gay marriage. And that's why we have a Supreme Court in the United States. The Supreme Court exists basically to impose the rule of the oligarchs on the people of the United States of America, while allowing them the illusion that they have some type of democratic control over important issues. The Supreme Court is there to show this is not the case. When it comes to important issues, the oligarchs finally have the final say, and the Supreme Court imposes it on the entire nation. Ireland chose this of its own free will, which is absolutely stunning in its depravity and stupidity. I don't know which comes first here.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the result itself that upset me. I was really taken aback by the jubilation. It has to be said, in almost kind of a frenzy and a hysteria about the result. It really shocked me, and I was thinking, you would expect maybe some sort of subdued celebrations, but on something so controversial, it just seemed to me. I was wondering how many of these people are planning to have abortions. I mean, the excitement was just palpable.
Abortion is nothing to celebrate.
Exactly.
People don't celebrate it. They say it's a tragic decision which women should be allowed to make on their own and blah, blah, blah. But to celebrate abortion, this is beyond the pale. What happened to the Irish? What happened to these people? This is a serious question. This is not a rhetorical question. We're talking about something that happened within 30 years. What happened over these 30 years?
That is the question that upset me most, because we know the sort of the corruption that's going on, and we know the agenda of people who are pushing it and everything else. But for the people themselves to be so excited about it, I think that's what really, I really was depressed for 2 or 3 days about it quite heavily. I was taken back by it, but they really seemed to think it was such a good thing. I mean, talk about Isaiah 5:20, woe to those who call good evil and evil good, you know. They're calling it a historic and great day for Ireland and a hopeful one, and Ireland's come into the light. And I mean,
this is crazy. This is completely crazy. The only thing I can refer to is the series that was published in Civiltà Cattolica during the 1890s. And the occasion of this series, Civiltà Cattolica is the official magazine of the Vatican, the official magazine of the Roman Catholic Church. And the occasion for these articles was the 100th anniversary of the French Revolution. And the question was, what have we gained? What has the result been of the French Revolution? And the results are uniformly negative. I mean, it unleashed a series of revolutions throughout the 19th century that were basically in reaction to the powers that got put in place after the French Revolution. So the Revolution of 1848, both Engels and Bishop von Kettler agreed, it was a revolution against capitalism. So what was the net result? And they had this stunning sentence. I remember reading it for the first time. Any country that turns away from the laws instituted by Christian kings will end up being ruled by Jews. Just one of those stunning things where suddenly you realize the full implications of this. And I think that's what we're seeing here. If you turn away from that referendum, which was inspired by Christian rulers in Ireland or the Catholic faith of Ireland, you're going to be ruled by Jews. And so we have George Soros in the background funneling money now to Amnesty International, which has abandoned its original mandate and now has become nothing but the avant-garde of the sexual revolution in Ireland. And the people evidently went along with this media campaign, and now they're going to have to contend with the new masters. And just to give you some indication of that, they've already acquiesced to their new masters. What the Irish didn't do is stiff the bankers. The Irish agreed after the collapse of 2008, the Irish agreed to have the government bail out those crooked bankers and their crooked loans. So you've got everything in place for Ireland being turned into a complete slave colony with the new masters of the universe in charge.
Yeah, I remember being at an event in 2012. For those who were aware of what that banker bailout actually represented, just the enslavement of the Irish people and the takeover by Jewish usury and into central banks, and there was a few people who were outraged by it, but the majority of people didn't see it, and it seems now they've just taken this to the next level with the cultural and moral issue as well. So
I met Mick Wallace in Tehran, and Claire, I forget her last name, but we spent some time together. My favorite anecdote is we get into the car in Tehran with my translator. The first question out of Mick's mouth is, where can we get a drink? Well, Mick, you're in Tehran, and don't ask the translator, because she'll be hanging from a crane if she gets you a drink. So don't do that. But anyway, I had the opportunity to talk to Mick and Claire, and I said, you know what happened to the left, don't you? The left was completely taken over by the sexual revolution. And now it used to be that the left had some type of economic program, and now all the left has is sexual liberation. So basically, the left's program is, you give us sexual liberation, and we won't complain about your economic system. We'll be docile sex robots, And even though we don't have enough money, we'll go to the gay disco in the evening to forget about all our troubles. And Mick agreed with me. He agreed with me. He said, that's the problem with the left. That's Michel Foucault's pact with the devil. That's the situation we're in right now. And that's Ireland's situation to a T.
Yeah, and of course, if you give them an inch and they take a mile, because this is how the so-called progressive always work. It's just always about equality, and it's always about this and that. But where it actually leads to is almost total depravity, because they no sooner got this result when they turned their attentions to Northern Ireland, which is right.
Right, they're never going to be satisfied. They want complete and total domination of everyone. Under their iron rod. And yeah, you're right. Northern Ireland is now next. And we'll see what happens there. Are they going to be able to resist the popular will, the volonté générale, okay, manipulated by George Soros and every media outlet being on the take from these powers? My friend Anthony McCarthy was scheduled to do a debate in Cork at the university. And at the last minute, he was informed that, by the way, it's going to be seven people against you. Well, why is that? Well, because that reflects the demographics of the situation at the university. Well, that's a good indication that the university isn't worth its the paper that it's written on. But I mean, this was the type of stacked deck that the pro-life side was up against in Ireland.
Yeah, I think they're made of stronger stuff up in the north. The loyalist, fundamentalists up there, and the fundamentalist Christians up there, they're pretty hardy people. They're not going to go down without a fight,
Yeah, who would ever think that I'd be cheering on the Protestants in the north?
I know.
Who would ever think that the Catholics in the south would betray their own patrimony so ferociously and so obviously? It's painful to contemplate.
Yeah, I mean, growing up in the nationalist side in Northern Ireland, I thought exactly the same thing. I could never have seen myself, joining those guys and uniting with them against Sinn Féin.
Yeah, well, tell me what happened. I still don't know what happened. How can you have this dramatic type of reversal in the space of 30 years? How can this happen? I wish someone could give me a clear explanation. I mean, I gave a talk in Dublin about 10 years ago, and it was on the priest pedophile crisis that obviously played a part in this. Okay, I said then, I was quoting, I forget the name of the lady I was quoting, an Irish journalist, who said this is this whole priest thing is to soften Ireland up for capitalism. And I thought, well, that was right. I thought that made sense then. I gave that speech 10 years ago. It's on YouTube. But apparently everything has continued apace. I don't know what it is. Well, I think they basically want to overthrow religion. Well, if you overthrow religion, what's the alternative? So what is it now? Opium is the religion of the masses. My apologies to Karl Marx, but that seems to be the situation in Ireland. So I'm standing out there after I'm giving my talk, and all of these, you wouldn't believe the people coming up to me. I get, maybe I'm wearing a suit and tie. Does that make me stand out in the crowd? But all these women who look as if they're completely drugged out are coming up and shaking me down for money. They're demanding. These are not panhandlers. These are women who are demanding money from me. Obviously, they look as if they need a fix. Okay. They need some drugs. They look really terrible. I don't know. Maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's drugs. But the whole situation looked really bad. So is that part of it? I mean, the British always used to keep whiskey cheap in Ireland to keep the population subdued. Well, maybe we're up to heroin now or OxyContin or whatever. But anyway, it's one thing to be under assault. It's another thing to be your own jailer. And I said this about Australia when I was trying to get down there to talk about the referendum on gay marriage. And I said, it's one thing when your grandfather got shipped off to Botany Bay because he stole Trevelyan's corn. Okay. So Australia was a penal colony. So now you're a neo-penal colony. Okay, what does that mean? That means every night you lock yourself in your own cell. You know, your grandfather never did that. You're locking yourself in your own cell by approving things like gay marriage, because that proves you're a colony of the United States of America.
Well, yeah, I think that's the great tragedy, because I was actually speaking to a lady who's a friend of my mother's in Northern Ireland, and she said, you know, the great tragedy is that they don't realize what they've just done.
No, they will find out sooner or later, and by then it'll be too late. Maybe we have to talk about the role that the Catholic Church played here. They were completely timid, even in the gay marriage. Now, I'm speaking a little bit from experience here, because I knew Dermot Martin when he was the assistant to Cardinal Gagnon at the Pontifical Council on the Family in Rome in the 1980s. And I remember visiting him. I remember talking to him. I remember him heading up some synod down there, you know, being a man on his way, you know, and he was on his way. He's now the primate of Ireland. He's the Cardinal Archbishop of Dublin. Well, he apparently during the gay marriage referendum said he wasn't going to tell the people, the faithful, how to vote. Well, why not? Isn't that why you're here? I mean, part of why you're here. And then apparently the church just stayed out completely in the whole abortion thing. And we're reasoning that they might have a negative effect if they got involved. Well, that may be true, but that's really a sorry state of affairs. And if you're abandoning your role as teacher, don't be surprised at the outcome.
Yeah, talk about signing on to impotence in such an important issue.
I know. And in many ways, I mean, I had have to bring it back. I did a piece for Culture Wars on the Jew taboo and the Catholic Church. I mean, the Catholic Church in 1965 made this revolutionary decision that from now on the Jews were going to be our friends. And as a the result has been disaster. Disaster in every single cultural battle since that time. Okay? The church cannot identify its enemy. Okay? Now, we know simply from fact, it's a fact, that the Jews were behind abortion in New York City and in California, New York State, I mean. And that was the prelude to Roe versus Wade, which was the national decision. It wouldn't have gotten anywhere without Jewish support. That's not my verdict. That's the verdict of Bernard Nathanson, who was a Jew, a doctor, and an abortionist at the time, who worked for the overturning of the laws in New York State. He later became a Catholic. Okay, he converted and repented, I presume, for what he had done. Okay, but that's the statement. Okay, gay marriage, again. Amy Dean writes in Tycoon magazine that if it weren't for the Jews, there would be no gay marriage. Now we have Cardinalship or Archbishop Chaput of Philadelphia, who's giving a speech about why we've lost so many battles. And he comes to the conclusion that it's secularizing activists. Well, what is a secularizing activist? Have you ever met one? Can you look them up in the phone book? No. See, here he's crippled by this policy that the church has adopted, that the Jews are our friends and we can't accuse them of anything. And they have used this as an excuse to just destroy the social order in these last 50 years. And so as Sun Tzu said a long time ago, the Chinese philosopher, if you can't identify the enemy, you will lose every battle. And the Catholic Church is proof of that right now. And so it's probably true of Ireland as well.
It certainly is. And, you know, Henry Ford spoke about that. The Jews, they talked about the secularization of the nation, and then we can fill the void in the schools and the public schools with Jewish revolutionary ideas. So, I mean, that's what they've done.
Yes. And we're not allowed to talk about it. Because if you mention this, you're anti-Semite. That's precisely the problem. I just came back from a conference in Iran. We were in Mashhad, and I brought this up. It was a dramatic conference because in the background, literally on a big TV screen, we had the Palestinians burning tires, marching toward the wall, the apartheid wall in Gaza, and being gunned down by Israeli snipers. At the same time this is happening, all of the big Jews in the world gathered at in Jerusalem to celebrate the moving of the embassy from to Jerusalem, the United States embassy. And at the same time, we had Donald Trump tearing up the nuclear agreement with Iran. So let's put this all in perspective. I turned to the I addressed the conference there, the members. I said, there are three reasons why you Iranians do not have a nuclear agreement anymore. The three reasons are Sheldon Adelson, Paul Singer, and Bernard Marcus. Three rich Jews. Our foreign policy, the foreign policy of the United States of America, is controlled by three rich Jews. That's the answer to your question. And secondly, the point here is that we're not allowed to say it. So you put these things together and you've got an absolutely toxic situation where the Israelis, supported by American Jews, can do things that no other nation on earth would dream of doing. You'd have Samantha Power invoking the right to protect in 5 minutes if some other country did this, and yet they can do this with impunity because we cannot criticize Jews, because we cannot mention Jews. And I'd like to added at this point that I'm grateful that I'm an American, because I will not go to jail for saying that. And I can't say that about Europe or about England, which brings up the issue of Jez Turner.
Yes, even what I do here puts me in a difficult situation, because I know how aggressive these people are, having a public voice, having this radio show. Perhaps the only saving grace is that it goes out, the largest audience is in the US, but still, if they get wind of this radio show, I'll probably get a knock on the door. But yeah, any of us who do talk about this issue in this country, we're vulnerable. And yeah, let's talk about Jez Turner. I met Jez last year. He was a gentleman. Nice chap. And this story's not just interesting because of the fact that he was imprisoned, but I mean, he was actually the Crown Prosecution Service initially declined to prosecute him,
right?
And then and the Jews brought so much pressure to bear that they basically overturned the decision and prosecuted him.
Yeah. And so what did he do? He criticized the Jewish police force as unconstitutional, policemen. Police officers in London had done the same thing. There was no question about the veracity of his report. Everyone knew that it existed. Everyone knew that it was controversial. So he said this, and because some Jew did not like what he said, Jez Turner is now in jail. Now, this is unconscionable. I mean, this is England is supposed to be known for a speaker's corner at Hyde Park, where everyone has the right to say something. Well, that's apparently not the case anymore, because you can't have these hate laws put in place by the Jewish lobby and free speech. It's impossible. You can't have both. You can't have it both ways. And so when England was forced to make a decision, they chose hate crimes, and Jez Turner is in jail as a result of it.
And not just Jez, but Alison Shablo, I went to her case as well. I was amazed, because I went to the actual one of her trials, and I thought she had a good chance of getting off by that. The judge didn't seem to be too convinced by the attempts by the prosecution to find her guilty of gross offense and to deliberately causing offense. But she too was found guilty, and she will be sentenced on the 14th of June. That's Alison Shablo, who wrote some songs, satire songs, questioning right. The Holocaust.
Yeah, my understanding is that it was the same situation as with Jez Turner. In other words, that there was an initial reluctance to bring this case to trial, but it got overridden from by Jewish pressure.
Yeah, and as I say, the judge, I did go down to that of interest, and the judge he seemed quite irritated by the prosecution, because they kept going around in circles, the same old stuff, and they were clutching at straws. And I really thought she had a good chance, but as you say, the same thing has happened again. So these people, you know, have a vice-like grip, it seems now, on our judicial system as well.
And not just England. When I was in Iran, I learned that Hervé Risson is also now being ready to be sentenced to go to jail because he wrote a book on the Talmud. So apparently quoting the Talmud is now an offense in France.
And most disgraceful of all, Ursula Haverbeck, an 88-year-old woman in Germany, has been put in prison now for 6 months for denying the Holocaust. I mean, that is just utterly shameful.
And there are German judges who are saying that this law is a bad law. The law that allows this type of prosecution is a bad law. There were Germans at the conference, and they told me that there are now 1,300 political prisoners in prison in Germany.
Well, the great hypocrisy over here is we have a lot of people talking about Tommy Robinson, whether it's InfoWars, whether it's Stefan Mullen, you know, a lot of these quite big alternative media outlets and many YouTubers talking incessantly. There's a whole hysteria over here about Tommy Robinson, and it's just silence on Alison Schablo and silence on Jess Turner. And Jess Turner, by the way, as you know, is someone who gave 12 years of his life to the military in this country.
That's right. That's right. So I think that the real explanation is that we need a martyr. Okay, we need a martyr. England needs a martyr to free speech, because otherwise they're going to feel bad about themselves, because they have to realize that they don't have free speech. So if they promote somebody like Tommy Robinson, this gives them the illusion that their heart is in the right place and they really support free speech. But the reality is that it's okay to criticize Muslims. Okay, and you can, and the reality is here that it's not really a free speech case, because he's just been, as I understand it, he's been now brought back for a contempt of court citation, because he was constantly photographing people coming in and out of the courtroom when there was a clear sign saying you're not allowed to do photography.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why he was there. I mean, because I broke down earlier, a year ago he was warned unequivocally, that he had a suspended sentence. So I just don't really understand how he thought he was going to be able to turn up there, do the same thing that he was unequivocally, you know, warned not to do, and avoid prison. It just seemed rather strange to me. But as you say, yeah, you can jump on the bandwagon because it's safe. Because you've got a whole mob behind you to criticize Islam. Not that Islam isn't the problem in this country, it is, but there's just the double standard is so odious, because Jewry is at least as big a problem, and it's just total silence.
Right. You can't criticize Jews.
Hi, and welcome back to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm Paul Stevenson. This is June 1st, 2018. If you've just joined me, I'm live with E. Michael Jones. Mike is the editor of Culture Wars magazine and books such as Barn Metal, and the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. You back with me, Mike?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, we were talking about the ridiculous hypocrisy over there with Israel and Hamas. I mean, you know, they talk about Hamas as if it was Satan incarnate, but Israel can just basically commit genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians, and apparently they're good guys.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here, we're talking about people going to jail now for saying things that everyone knows is true. And I think this means that the rationale of the regime does not play anymore. It's not perceived as credible. So you have a situation where, as I talked about with Donald Trump, ripping up an agreement, and here are the Iranians pleading for the rule of law and the sanctity of contracts. Well, wait a minute. The Americans are the ones who are supposed to be talking about that. That's what we believe, or we're supposed to believe. It's part of, you know, we don't have a whole lot of tradition or whatever here, but we are based on the idea that every man is equal in front of the law, and the contracts are sacred. Well, we don't believe that anymore. Trump has clearly shown that he holds the whole idea of the rule of law in contempt. And now he's trying to work out an agreement with the North Koreans in light of the fact that he just tore up an agreement with the Iranians. And to make it worse, we have people like John Bolton and Mike Pence over here talking about the Libya model, which means if you sign an agreement with us as Muammar Gaddafi did and give up your nuclear weapons, then we'll come in and destroy you anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And for some reason, the Koreans didn't like that idea.
Yeah, I wonder why.
What's wrong with these Koreans? Don't they want to end up like Muammar Gaddafi? What's wrong with them? Yeah. So, I mean, you've reached a point where it's terminal. You know, the whatever you want to call it, the hypocrisy or the self-contradiction has become so terminal that large segments of the population are basically saying, no, we can't go along with this. And at this point, the regime comes in and says, well, if you don't go along with it, we'll throw you in jail. And so it's like the last gasp here. It's the last gasp. I have a friend who made an analogy with tennis. Okay, it's like going to the net in tennis. It's an act of, in many ways, of desperation. And you know it's going to be a short game once somebody goes to the net. He may win, but it's going to be a short game because you can't sustain that over the long haul. And I'm saying the West cannot sustain this over the long haul. They can't sustain this type of contradiction, kind of wagging their finger with this air of moral superiority when they're breaking the very rules that they're proposing for the rest of the world. That can't go on.
Yeah, the hubris and the hypocrisy is just is so odious and staggering. I encapsulated and epitomized in Nikki Haley. I mean, it's almost impossible for me to watch this woman.
Yeah, lecturing about Saddam Hussein. I don't know whether you remember this, but the poison gas attack that was basically the false flag in response to Trump's threat to pull American troops out of. Well, Nikki Haley's talking about dead babies. Well, dead babies, yeah, that's bad. Unless it's abortion, and then it's okay, right, Nikki? I mean, let's get this straight here. You know, you've run, nobody believes you anymore. You're making a fool out of yourself. And so why don't you just keep it to yourself then?
Yeah, I mean, what has happened? I mean, you're well placed to comment on this with your knowledge of history and the books you've written. The Catholic Church capitulation, it seems, is a big factor. But how has this clique, this Talmudic clique, managed to have so much power, which is ostensibly unprecedented in the last century, that they failed to manage for the rest of the history of the Church?
Well, because there are large segments of the Catholic population that feel that the Catholic Church is a burden, and they want to overthrow the burden. They perceive the moral law as a burden. That was France. I mean, that was the revolution in France. Obviously, it's always orchestrated by elites, but you have a large segment that will follow along because they feel that the moral law is odious. And people who feel that way end up having real slavery imposed on them by the people who willing to exploit them without any reference to the moral law. Okay? It's like, okay, the sexual liberation, okay, you got what you wanted there, but don't ask for a raise because you've already, by your actions, implicitly stated that there is no moral law, and we agree with you, and so don't expect economic justice in a world where you are promoting sexual liberation. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in Ireland when I was growing up, a lot of this, anti-Catholic propaganda, which in my opinion was really overstressed about the paedophilia stuff within the Catholic Church. Obviously, that is, you know, tremendously evil and needs to be exposed. However, I think it really was pushed to a level which was beyond appropriate or necessary. But I remember talking to certain people, and I remember having a vague sense that they were, I don't know, it kind of, they were almost glad that it freed them up the obligations of the Catholic Church if they can just say, oh, that Catholic Church is just a bunch of hypocrites, you know?
Yeah, well, you got a new master, and he's not going to be as kind to you as the Catholic Church was. And that's the situation you're faced with right now. So sodomy and usury, they're your new masters. You go for them and see how happy you're going to be in a couple of years from now.
Well, exactly. That's it, isn't it? Usury, sodomy, murder of your own children. I mean, I don't think that's going to particularly work out too well for Ireland.
No, and you have no defense now. What is your defense going to be? What is the defense of the poor people, the people who don't have money and power? All they can do is stand up and say, this is wrong, and appeal to the conscience of people who were trying to oppress them. Well, if you can't make that appeal, then you have no appeal. And this was basically my point in talking about the Jew taboo and breaking the Jew taboo when I spoke in Mashhad in Iran. If we, what else do we have? I mean, they have money, they have power. What do we have? Well, we can appeal to conscience. We can say it's wrong. And if we can't say it's wrong and you're doing something wrong, well, then we have no power whatsoever.
So yeah, we can have.
You know, we have to, because as I said, it was Max Blumenthal who brought this up. You know, taking responsibility for the hell that we have created, we meaning American Jews. They don't feel comfortable anymore with Israel. There are large segments of American Jews who are simply checking out and just abandoning their allegiance to Israel because of this unconscionable behavior. Now, if we can't appeal to these people and say, do you defend this? Are you willing to stand up and defend this? If we can't do that, then we can't do anything. If we can't say, no, you're doing something wrong, what can we say? We have nothing. We are completely defenseless, and we may as well just roll over and play.
All right, Mike. Do you want to break down a little bit? Because it's hard to know how many listeners are new and everything else. Do you want to break down a little bit about what we mean when we talk about the Jewish revolutionary spirit for anybody who's absolutely new to this, and maybe touch on the Frankfurt School and stuff like that? Because that's an important issue, and it's a good way, I think, of explaining to people what's going on today with political correctness.
Yeah, I got involved in this issue about 10 years, well, more than 10 years ago. We're now, this is the 10th anniversary of the publication of my book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. And it began at the same time that Walton Mearsheimer's book, The Israel Lobby, began, which is basically with the 2003 invasion of Iraq, when I realized that the neoconservatives, which is a Jewish political movement, had basically taken over the foreign policy of the United States of America. Just shocked to see that we're marching into Iraq, you know, never did anything. Nobody believed, or I certainly didn't believe, the weapons of mass destruction story. But here we go, and suddenly, how did this happen? And I began to look at the politics of it, and I began to think, well, you can't explain it politically. Because Irving Kristol, who was the father of neoconservatism, was a Trotskyite. When he was in his undergraduate years, he went to the City College of New York. He was part of Alcove B, which was the Trotskyite group, and Alcove A was the Stalinist group. And basically, all the Jews were communists, one way or the other, at the City College of New York. And so now they're all conservative. Well, how do you explain this? Well, you can't explain it. The only way you can explain it, the continuity, is being Jewish. And what is the common denominator? It's being for revolution. And the terms of the revolution change, but they're constant in their support of revolution. So then you have to ask yourself, well, why? What is it? Is it genetic? You know, and the answer is no. No, it's not. Because the whole term anti-Semitism was created in 1871 by a man by the name of Wilhelm Marr, a German, who was a revolutionary himself, had participated in the revolution of 1848, was bitter about how the Jews sold out the revolution in Hamburg, where he was, and tried to come up. He hated religion, and so he needed another way to criticize Jews, and so he came up with a racial term, which was popular at that time. This was the high noon of racism, Darwinism, all that type of stuff. And he said it was because of their racial inheritance. Well, that doesn't fly anymore. The church never believed that. It never believed that the people were biologically determined, that the Jews were biologically determined to act in a certain way. Hitler did that, but Hitler was not acting as a Christian. So what was it then? Well, I had to take it all the way back to the foot of the cross. At the time when Jesus Christ, the Messiah, appeared on this earth to the chosen people. The Jews were the chosen people at that time. And God did not force them to accept their Messiah. They had to accept him of their own free will. And they did not, because what he proposed did not fit into their image of what they wanted to be. They wanted to be a powerful nation under a leader like King David, ending hundreds of years of oppression of the Jewish people. And this guy comes along and starts preaching you know, love your neighbor as yourself and turn the other cheek. And they didn't like it. And they got whipped up into a frenzy by the Jewish leadership and they killed him. They killed their Messiah. They killed Jesus Christ. Now, St. John, in his gospel, refers to Jesus Christ as the Logos. This is a revolutionary idea, but basically he's bringing together the Hebrew scriptures and Greek philosophy into a new synthesis, and it's called Christianity. So you killed the Jews killed the Logos incarnate. You rejected the Logos. That means you reject. Logos is the Greek word for order. It's for reason. It's for speech. Every word ology that we have from biology to Scientology is based on the word logos. And you put them all together and you get some sense of the logos of the universe, which is what the Jews rejected when they killed, crucified Jesus Christ. And when they rejected that, they became revolutionaries. And that's what they've been ever since. So you have basically the axis of human history is the forces of logos, epitomized by the Catholic Church, being opposed by the forces of anti-logos, epitomized by the Jews. So, and to get back to the Civiltà Cattolica article, if the Catholic people, the people of Christian Europe, abandon that, well, they're going to be ruled by the Jews. And that's the story in a nutshell. That's where we ended up. And the thin end of the wedge is more often than not sexual liberation. The Jews promote pornography because they know it's a weapon that can demoralize the Christian population and get them to choose their own chains, get them to lock themselves in their own cell every night.
Yeah, it's a deception, which is consistent with the fact that it is satanic and to deceiving people into what they're opting for is good, and that the natural order of things, which is good, that's evil.
That's right. So if you're interested in the story of the Jews, I recommend The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. And if you're interested in how sexual liberation is a form of control, I recommend my book, Libido Dominandi, because that book begins with the French Revolution and a figure like the Marquis de Sade, who was one of the earliest figures who realized you can turn sexual liberation into a political control mechanism, which is precisely what he tried to do with his pornography. And it only got the history of the next 200 years after the French people turned away from the Catholic Church, or some of them did, is the history of more and more refined systems of political control, up to the point where I began the talk I've given all over the world, where I talk about in 2002, when the Israeli IDF, the Israeli Defense, the army came into Ramallah. They took over the TV stations and started broadcasting pornography over these TV stations. Now, this is a sign that pornography is not freedom, unless you believe that Israelis want to bring freedom to the Palestinians, which I think is hard to maintain. What it shows is that pornography is a weapon, and it's a weapon there to destroy the local population by distracting them, first of all, and then over the long haul by destroying their moral fiber.
Yes, indeed. It's just complete attack on the family and reproduction and all manner of degeneracy. I suppose the only hope is that, that it'll actually end up just imploding under its own degenerate weight eventually,
Well, the other part of it is, if you understand what it is, you're a little bit armed. I mean, human nature is weak, but at least you know what you're up against, and it's not freedom. I guarantee you that. So it's kind of like neck and neck. Are you going to be able to promote an understanding of this that will allow people to pull back from it? That's my hope.
All right, cool, Mike. All right, well, we'll wrap it up there. Do you want to just give out your details quickly?
You can get these books on culturewars.com. Go to culturewars.com. They're also available on Amazon, and I have a lot of ebooks on Kindle at Amazon. So between these, you should be able to get any of the stuff that I've mentioned today.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure as always, Mike. Thanks for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers. Bye. All right, folks, there goes Mike. I will upload a video of this on YouTube, and I will also send it to Mike. He has a YouTube channel as well. Do subscribe there. My YouTube channel is just Paul Stevenson, because, you know, the more of us talking about this, the better. So if you go and like the videos there and subscribe there, that's cool.